ya lo hace, pierna derecha, directo al arco, golazo, golazo.
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Wednesday, September 26, 2018. Can you stop coming at us, news? Come on, two big news came out yesterday in the world of Canadian soccer, and to talk about them both, Rudy Schuler joins us on the line from the Sporting News. Rudy, good morning.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Good, Rudy. I guess let's start with the bad part of it, the bad news, because that one, we did talk a little bit on Two Salties yesterday about Ballou's decision to commit for Canada, which is the exciting. So we'll end in the positive, so we'll start on the negative. Were you surprised by the timing of Carl Robinson's departure?
Yeah, a little bit. We've heard rumblings that he wasn't going to go past the end of the season. Not the end of the season. Go past this year with the Whitecaps. At least I've heard rumblings from various people around the league that even if somehow the Whitecaps were to make it all the way to MLS Cup, Carl Robinson's time was up at the Whitecaps just because of disagreements. Between himself and the front office and you know, the staling of a relationship after 5 years that tends to happen at soccer clubs. So I think I was expecting it by the end of the year, at least before the next preseason started. But as I tweeted it, I said, I'm honestly surprised that it happened now, especially since the Whitecaps, you know, they're on the outside looking in, but they're not terribly far out. They're only 4 points out and of a playoff spot. And we've seen crazier things happen in MLS. To throw the team into complete turmoil like that means that the front office obviously felt justified in doing it right away rather than waiting to see what would happen with the team to see if they can squeak their way into the playoffs. But for a team as conservative as the Whitecaps have been and have been, you know, their entire run through MLS, it is a little surprising that they would pull the trigger relatively early into the season, considering that there is a chance that they can still make the playoffs.
The other question we could ask, Rudy, is when we look at Vancouver, yes, it's been a long stay for Robinson. It's been a good run, not great, not that terrible, 50-50 or a little bit under 500. But when you look at the development on the soccer side, the development of the look of the team on the pitch, the development of the progress of this team, it has been stagnant for a while. Is this the beginning of what we could say an overhaul, a turnover spree in the offseason? Is this the first moves of many? Because Davies is leaving and money is going to come in. Are those things related?
Well, it's tough to say until we know who the next coach is, right? And who's going to be making those decisions. Is it still going to be the front office that makes those decisions on behalf of the coach? Or is the coach going to have more of a say? Or is it... You know, is it going to be a 50-50 thing? It's really tough to kind of speak on behalf of the Whitecaps of what their plans are because, you know, as you mentioned, it really did stagnate on the field. I think the Whitecaps played better soccer 2 or 3 years ago under Carl Robinson than they do now. You know, and I think that was, I don't know if that's a kind of a testament to the personnel they had or that was by design, you know, because they last year they tried to play a very similar game to what they played this year. You know, a lot of crosses to the box, a lot of route one, but they didn't have the striker for it. And then they got Kai Kamara, and he's the guy that, you know, he's the guy that kind of finishes that kind of look that they have. And, you know, to his credit, he scored a lot of goals, getting on the ends of Alphonso Davies and Marcel Dion crosses. But it's not, you know, it's not the attractive kind of soccer we saw a few years ago. Even still under Carl Robinson, when it was a little bit more of a Latin brand of soccer that was kind of the identity of the Whitecaps, that we've gotten so far away from that now. It's much more of a stereotypical English Division II type of style maybe with a little bit more skill, because there's guys like Jordi Reyna and, of course, Alfonso Davies and a couple other guys, Chris Teixeira, guys that are a little bit more skillful on the ball. But at the end of the day, they're still whipping in crosses and hoping for the best and trying to win off set pieces with their big center back coming up the front, trying to head balls into the box. So, yeah, the style has changed a lot. And, again, I don't know how much of that is on Robinson and how much of that is on the team of the front office team above him. But I think they need to get harmonized in that, and they need to find out what their identity is going to be. And I don't think going forward you want to make that your identity. I don't think you want to bank everything on Route 1 soccer, because the game has just passed that by. There's definitely room for that type of play in certain situations and even during certain stretches of the season. But to develop your entire identity over that, I don't think that's a feasible plan going forward. So the Whitecaps need to kind of look internally and see what they want to do, because I think they're stuck between these two identities that they had. A few years ago they had the Latin American kind of style, and they have a lot of those players on the roster still. But what we've seen this year is a lot more of the Route 1 soccer that has taken hold. So now they got to figure out which one of those they want to prioritize, and I think that does lend itself to some turnover. I don't know how much turnover. But we already know that Alfonso Davies is gone. There's probably like three or four other guys that'll probably be no longer on this roster. Efren Juarez has been kind of a bust. There's a bunch of Breck Shea. is he going to stick around? I don't know. Can they find a suitor for him? Because I think he's still under contract. There's a bunch of guys that are getting paid a lot of money to sit on the bench. And I think that's another concern that they have, is how much room do they have to really overhaul? There's three or four obvious guys that are going to leave just because we know they're going to leave. But is there a lot of room for the new manager and new management to come in and overhaul the team? I don't know. These are all questions that they need to take into consideration. And I don't know, honestly, I don't know if they already have when they sacked Robinson. I think it was more of a reactionary move.
Yeah, after a 2-1 loss against Dallas at home, it wasn't the worst loss of the season. We could have expected this move to take place maybe earlier on, after the Canadian Championship, and apparently, and this is rumors at this point, but it's been confirmed by a few sources, apparently after the Canadian Championship loss to Toronto, there was a spat in the locker room between Robinson and upper management, and this all started a bit earlier this year when apparently as well, you had the assistant coaches where the management were telling the assistant coaches and Robinson, we're not going to renew their contract and we're gonna look at things, and Robbo said, well, if they go, I go. And then started the rift. The timing of it, like you mentioned earlier, it's a bit suspect, with Vancouver being the only team in reach, maybe, of joining the playoff, not in the sixth positions right now in the Western Conference. My question is, Robinson's responsibilities were more than just managing the team. He was able to do player negotiations and was responsible for bringing in new players and scouting. Do you see a change of mentality like some other places right now, Atlanta, where a lot of scouts are being hired, a lot of money is being spent in the upper front offices to give the manager help in recruiting and not put the onus of recruiting solely on him? Was this one fault of Robinson, and could the Davies money be used in more than one way?
Oh, it absolutely could, and I think if the Whitecaps are smart, they should, because, yes, they're going to get a big Davies windfall, and I think they should use part of that to bring in a player that will at least replace him or one of the other key pieces that are possibly leaving, because, they are a few pieces away from really being a good team. But, they shouldn't spend like a drunken sailor either, kind of just like... There are they have this one-time windfall, so let's just throw it all away. I think that they would be prudent in taking some of that money and putting it back into maybe hiring a few more scouts or another management type, something along those lines. Maybe beefing up their analytics division. I don't know. Something that isn't quite as sexy as buying a DP, but has a much longer-term impact. So I think that if they're smart with their money, that's what they'll do. Those things aren't, they're not expensive compared to buying, a $2 or $3 million DP that requires a big transfer fee as well. But a couple of smart front office hires can go a long way. So you know, they've got a lot of decisions on their hands, and it's not just with the management. It's not just with who they're hiring to run the on-field product. It's if they're going to overhaul the front office, then they might as well go all in, you know, because, you know, they've gotten rid of the assistant coaches and the coach, and you know, regardless of whether that spat was real or not, and you know, we've all heard those stories, and there's a lot of truth to it. Regardless of any of that, they now have a chance to really start over and wipe the slate clean. So at least at the management position, again, I reiterate that they have a lot of money tied up in players, in certain players. I keep saying Breck Shea, but he's the one that always comes to mind. Certain players are tied up in contracts that you can't just dump. This is MLS, you know, you can't just dump players and get away with it. So I think they have more of an opportunity to overhaul the front office than they do their players. And you know what? I think that actually has more of an opportunity to have an impact long term. And if they can think a little bit outside the box and think about, you know, a proper analytics guy, a better scouting department, those kinds of things that help the back end, but again, aren't sexy kind of move for the fans, but are kind of instrumental into modern soccer clubs, then maybe they'll be able to get back on track. Because I do think that this club has done some good things over the years, but you know, over the past 3-4 seasons, they've been pretty mediocre from top to bottom. And I think they know that. And their fans are definitely starting to show that they know that as well. So I think everything kind of needs an internal review. And it's going to be very interesting to watch what the Whitecaps do over the next 3-4 months.
If there was a manager out there that has a track record of succeeding, overachieving results based on the talent on the pitch and being able to take smaller markets, say, and have them excel beyond their certain level, and if this person happened to be Canadian as well and happened to be looking for a job, would I be describing someone that they might be looking at?
Yeah, you tell me, Dwayne. You know, we know exactly who we're talking. You're talking about Mark Dos Santos, of course. I don't know if he's actually looking for a job, because he is under the employment of Bob Bradley and LAFC. Of course, I would assume, jump at the opportunity to get his own club in MLS and start from there. Is he one of the guys that the Whitecaps are looking at? There are rumblings, but who knows? I mean, I think he's been connected to every, you know, vacancy in MLS over the past 2 years anyway. So yeah. I don't know how much credence I'm lending to those rumors right now. I don't know how much the Whitecaps care whether their incoming guy is a Canadian or not. I think they just care about bringing the best candidate for their own vision, whatever that may be. That being said, I think Mark Dos Santos has completely proven that he is ready to take the next step up. And I don't think that Bob Bradley will stand in his way. I don't think LAFC will stand in his way if he wants to take over at San Jose or Vancouver or wherever the case may be. I do think that there's a very good chance that he'll be in MLS next year as a head coach. Whether that's in Vancouver, we'll see. But, you know, there are far worse candidates out there that they can be looking at. So especially for a team with a profile of the Whitecaps that isn't going to be the biggest spender, isn't the most desirable market. And that's not me talking about Vancouver as a city, because it's a beautiful city with a lot of good things going for it. But, you know, athletes and soccer players, like all athletes, are very insular. They don't know until they know, right? So all they know is they've never really heard of Vancouver, or they don't really know anything about it. So they have to be convinced that Vancouver is the team for them. So until Vancouver gets that higher profile, they're gonna have to be looking at guys that like a Mark Dos Santos, who can make do with you know, less than what his competitors are making do with. So absolutely, I think he should be at the top of their list. I don't know if he is. They'd be silly if he's not, but that's just my personal opinion.
You mentioned San Jose, their coaching vacancy as well right now, and obviously this is back-to-back pretty quick firings that are happening here. For years and years and years, MLS was a league where we really didn't see the same type of turnover, same type of like pressure that was put on managers. Is this an indication that things might be changing, and as we enter the newest era of MLS, whatever .0 it is, that we are going to see more of these, more pressure put on managers, more pressure to make changes mid-season?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's just natural with the increasing amounts of money in the game, and the increase that when you increase the amount of money that's involved in MLS, and that increases the stakes that are involved, right? So you have the Atlantis coming in and the LAFCs coming in, and then you have the stalwarts, you know, obviously like Seattle and TFC last year, and you know, the NYCFC and the New York Red Bulls that, you know, all kind of push the envelope in their own kind of way. Maybe not spending so much on the field like they're in the Red Bulls case, but in the academy. So these are teams that are not afraid to open their wallets, as we've seen with Atlanta, with Tata Martino and New York City FC with Patrick Vieira, bringing in guys that are you know, world renowned, either players or coaches or both in certain cases, and that does that pushes the stakes higher. So when, you know, some of these older teams that have been around, that have been able to kind of cruise on hiring MLS retreads, they're no longer able to do that because they're being left behind. You know, that kind of forces them to try to keep up as well. So this is all to me, it's just all a natural progression of the you know, increasing money and increasing visibility of MLS. That's going to do that because teams aren't going to sit idly. Well, most teams, because there are certainly still some teams that are okay with just sitting idly by and allowing, you know, the mediocre to keep happening as they collect their checks from some. But for the most part, a lot of these guys are, you know, they're billionaires and they have egos. I'm talking about the owners, of course. They don't want to be beaten out by other billionaires. it's just human nature. You want to be at the top of the pile, right? So, to me, it's just a natural progression, and we're going to see coaches around the league be on shorter leashes, and I'm not entirely sure whether that's a good thing or not, but for right now, I think it's okay. I think that's just because it's just falling more in line with the rest of the world, and I think that's all what we all want, isn't it, out of MLS, is to become a little bit more like
the rest of the world.
A regular soccer league.
And I think we're going to go away from the old man's country club. And it all started with Bruce Arena, Siggy Schmidt. Those are not coming back in for the next foreseeable future, for sure. Let's move to yesterday, about 12:20 p.m. We're all living our lives, wondering what the world will bring to us, wondering what's next, wondering what beautiful things is going to happen. And then, out of nowhere, we have a little video on social media. Baloo commits to Canada. We were not expecting it. I don't think anyone outside the room where they shot that video knew. Maybe the best kept secret for like Canadian soccer in a long time. Jean-Yves Baloo Tablah of Barcelona B commits to the Canadian men's national team. How surprised were you?
It's funny. I'll tell you a story. I was actually laying down, just watching. I was watching a movie. I was watching the newest Tomb Raider movie, of all things. And it was kind of boring, so I just decided to look at my phone.
That's what I thought.
It's okay. It was, you know, this isn't a movie review show or anything like that. It was a decent enough movie. You know, it was something I could watch on an afternoon when I didn't have to work. So anyway, I saw my phone light up a little bit. Like, okay, whatever. I kind of opened up Twitter. Wait, what? What? Okay, and then I stopped paying attention to the movie. I was like, pause. Okay, start scrolling. I honestly didn't even pause it. I just let it run in the background. I started scrolling through my feed, and then whoa, there's video here. And is that Baloo Tablah? What's going on here? Click it, and I immediately recognized the style of one Max Bell, who was a long time CSA. He used to work for the CSA, and now he has his own company. Doing video production for the CSA and for other organizations, but I immediately recognized the style because I remember it from when Junior Hoylett committed a couple of years ago. Now I guess it was 3-4 years ago now, and it was also Max Bell who went and talked to him. So I immediately recognized that style. Like oh okay, this could be good. So I was just as shocked as everybody else. You know. We had heard there were rumors that he was considering Canada for the Toulon tournament because it wouldn't keep him, it wouldn't make him cap tied. He wanted to play in the U-20s back in, I guess that was, what was that, May or something like that?
Yeah, me too.
It didn't happen. The rumors were that his agent was kind of, please don't do that right now. You just focus on Barcelona. So he did that. But the fact that Canada Soccer is saying, no, he's coming in now to play in the Nations League, which only means one thing. He's going to be cap-tied as soon as he steps on that pitch. That's unbelievable, because it continues this process and this kind of train that's happening with Canada. You know, we saw it with Alphonso Davies last year, and then he burst onto the scene in the Gold Cup. We've seen it with other dual nationals leading up to this. You know, I mentioned Junior Hoylett; he's another one. Going even back to Tesho Akindele, you know, who isn't he's not a superstar by any stretch, but you know, he had options. He was a big deal when that happened. And so, like, when's the last time a dual national who had more ties to Canada than the other country actually chose Canada? Now, I'm not saying that Ballou has more ties to Canada than Ivory Coast, but it could be 50-50 or so, because he spent about half his life there, half his life here. That's incredible. And I think, like I said, that kind of continues this trend that we're seeing, where more players are choosing Canada. We've seen Liam Millar is another one. He rejected English call-ups. Alessandro Busti, who's the Juventus youth goalkeeper, he looks like he's all in with the Canadian youth national team and the senior team if he steps on the pitch. So, you know, this is a good trend. And I know that obviously Canada winning the World Cup bid alongside U.S. and Mexico helps. It helps immensely. But you got to give credit to going back to Benito Floro, and then, of course, Zambrano, and now Herdman, and of course the backroom staff at the CSA as well, who are all putting their work in and not getting any credit for it. So let's give them some credit for it too, getting all these guys and keeping the lines of communication open and doing it, because to me it's just wonderful, and the fact that they're able to pull off this where nobody expected it. Everybody expected him to kind of sit on the sidelines for another 2 or 3 years at least before he makes this decision. He just comes out on a Tuesday afternoon and says, "Hey, you know, I'm going to be at the next game in 3 weeks." Like, what? Wait, what? That's incredible, and that's kind of the boost in the arm that the Canada Soccer needed in a news cycle where they weren't really being talked about for a while until Alphonso Davies goes over to Bayern Munich. So
so you're
getting
saying,
people talking about it is great.
You're saying don't sack the CSA then?
Well, I think the old CSA has been sacked a long time ago. So let's move on from that as well. Let's be like the dual nationals and actually move ahead with Canada.
Before I let Dwayne jump in, Rudy, I have a question for you. You mentioned, you alluded to it. So Hargreaves, Bunbury, and company, this time is over. Is this really a new time, a new place for the Canadian men's national team? And how important is the great rise of a few players that maybe changes the dynamic and changes the perception of a Ballou Tabla to joining this team, like the rise of Alphonso Davies, the rise of Jonathan David? Are those performances by those players enticing Ballou Tabla to come in and be part of it? Because he was part of it in the youth side. We've seen him before with the Canada shirt playing. We've seen him with the Quebec shirt playing. Is really like the performance of an Alphonso Davies and the prospect of Ballou not being part of it. Was he a bit jealous? Could it be possible? Like, well, I want to be part of that too.
Oh, I'm sure. He was motivated by it. I don't know how jealous he is of those guys. You know, I don't know how close him and Alphonso Davies are. I know they follow each other on Instagram and whatnot. But they must have had limited interaction at the Canadian youth levels. But of course, Davies is a couple of years younger. So, a couple of years. He's a year and a half younger. Regardless, I do think that he was looking at the program and seeing that things are on the up and up. You know, you look at the young attacking players that Canada has on the rise. Of course, Davies and David, and now Ballou Tabla. But of course, even look at a Kyle Larin, who's relatively young, but is a few years older than those guys. It really is something to watch. And I think that, you know, players want to play with other good players. And it may seem a little bit cynical, but they want to see that when they go play for this national team that they're basically tying themselves to for life, that they're going to be able to succeed and be good. And, you know, not it's not going to be a sad undertaking every time they step on the pitch for Canada. You know, they're not going to be completely played off the pitch and it's not going to be fun, right? So they want to have fun. They're, you know, at the end of the day, they're playing a sport that they grew up loving. And who doesn't like to win more than lose, right? So being able to see guys like Alphonso Davies, you know, break out and get bought by Bayern, Liam Millar come out and play, and Jonathan David just have a ridiculous first couple of weeks as a pro. I'm sure that influenced a lot of what Tabla was looking at. If there's a little bit of a friendly rivalry between those guys, all the better for Canada, because this is something that, you know, without a hint of hyperbole, this could possibly be the best attacking core that's coming up at the same time for Canada ever. I think that's definitely something that Tabla wanted to be part of, because he knows a lot of these guys. He knows a few, well, not a lot of them. He knows a few of them anyway from playing in the youth levels. But it's different when you're playing at the youth levels and you're the star, as Balu was for those youth levels, to leaving for a while and then seeing that, you know what, there's some other stars coming out. It takes the pressure off him as well, so that he doesn't have to be the guy to carry the team. Now he knows he can just be himself. So I think that definitely feeds into it a little bit. And I'm curious to see how they all play off each other, because we've never seen Alphonso Davies and Balu and even, you know, and go to the older guys, Junior Hoylett, all on the field at the same time. So to me, that's a very exciting thing, because watching Canada play over the course of my lifetime, it's never been about the attacking, beautiful soccer. Except for maybe, you know, a 5-year period in the early to mid 2000s with the, you know, Dwayne De Rosario's, Atiba Hutchinson, Julian Nagusman kind of era. They played a pretty good brand of soccer. But aside from that, it's always been, you know, kind of dour, try to. You know, damper out, try to bore the other teams to sleep and play solid defense. Now it's gone the other way. I feel very confident in their attack as long as these guys keep progressing the way they seem to be. But I'm not sure how well they're going to defend. So maybe it'll make things more exciting for the casual fan as well, because at least Canada will be able to score. If they're going to give up three, at least they'll be able to score three or four, right? So, and Balu definitely helps that whole conversation along as well.
I'm looking forward to it. Rudy, it goes without saying that our current team, Canada's current team, none of them are old enough to remember seeing Canada in 1986. I don't think any of them were born. I'd have to look. But Atiba might have been, if he's still involved. But
he was three. Yeah.
Yeah. But here's the depressing thing, the truly depressing thing, is this current group of people are barely old enough, if old enough at all, to remember the last time Canada qualified for a U-20 World Cup.
Yeah.
You look at the amount of teenage talent that's here right now. You look at the tournaments coming up on November 1st. Is this announcement any indication we might see Balu involved in the U-20 setup? And do we have a chance to end that 13-year drought without qualifying for an under-20 World Cup, which is in Poland next year, for those who don't know?
It's possible. It really depends on Barcelona, what they want to do, because most of that U-20 tournament does not fall on a FIFA date. And then, of course, it also depends on what John Herdman wants to do with the senior team, because Canada, the senior national team, also has a Nations League qualifier in the middle of November as well on the FIFA date. So it really depends on a number of factors. If you look at this U-20 side, if they were able to collect all of their talent together, wow, it's unbelievable, right? Because I just mentioned how much attacking talent Canada has coming up. All these guys are under 20. Right. Obviously, you, I'm not talking about the Kyle Larins of the world, but you know, Liam Millar is under 20. Alphonso Davies obviously is under 20. Balu Tabla is under 20. There are a lot of players. Jonathan David is under 20. There are a lot of other players that are kind of on the cusp of breaking out as well, that are having good seasons with their, you know, the reserve sides of MLS clubs or over in Europe, that are you know, very talented, and if you put all of them together, wow, I think Canada has a very, very good shot of qualifying. But again, it all depends on what the clubs want to do, because again, they have the right to keep the players back away from the FIFA dates, the FIFA windows, and then on top of that, it also depends on what John Herdman wants to do, because I do think that the senior national team has to always take precedence, regardless of how great it would be to see Canada in a U-20 World Cup again. The senior national team is the you know, it's the it's the be all and end all of a national team program. So if John Herdman says, you know, I want Alfonso Davies and Balu Tabla to play, I think they're in St. Kitts that month, then that's what they'll be, right? If he says, you know, maybe we can do without them for this time because they pummeled Dominica 11-0 at BMO the month before, then that's what they can do too. And all of a sudden you see, you know, Alfonso Davies and Balu Tabla on that team just wrecking the rest of CONCACAF. Maybe that's a good thing to have too, just to build up the confidence of the younger guys going up too. I don't know, but there's so many different kind of balls in play that it's really tough to say whether this Tabla decision was partially motivated by the U20s, because I do think that there's so many other factors involved.
Yeah, and if we're going to twist the arm of the bigger clubs to get these guys released, I would look at October 2019 as when I would want that to happen. For those that don't know, that's a reference to when the CONCACAF Olympic Qualifying Championship is going to take place, which is another tournament that looks pretty exciting right now with the young talent that's out there. And I would love to see Canada back in the Olympics. I think it would matter a great deal. And we've seen on the women's side how much potential that has. All right, final question on this, Rudy. Unless Kevin has wanted to jump in. But the final question I have on this is this. Should we be putting the brakes on? I remember sitting around and standing up and literally having a standing ovation at a pub when Kevin Allman got cap-tied. So is this a little bit of us being like a little hypersensitive in the past? Sacramento's own Kevin Allman, yeah.
Yeah. It's tough. It's tough because, you know, you want to celebrate these little accomplishments and these little milestones along the way, and make no mistake, getting guys like of this type of talent with these types of ceilings to commit to Canada, that's a big deal, because in the past, and we've mentioned this a number of times in the show already, that never happened. You know, just getting them to say, you know what, I'm gonna wear the Canada shirt going forward, that's never really happened at such a large scale as we're seeing now. From guys that have these incredibly high ceilings. We know what Alfonso Davies' ceiling is already, because he's already signed to Bayern. We know what Balu's ceiling is already, because he's already signed to Barcelona. Right? We already know what Jonathan David's ceiling is, because he's already played in the Europa League qualifiers, and he's playing for a Belgian top division club. These are guys that are highly touted and on a, you know, on seemingly such a great curve. That it's very easy to get wrapped up in the hype train. For me, the douse of cold water in this whole thing is that, yes, there are a ton of attacking options on this national team program right now, and should they all pan out to be what they're going to be, and there's no reason why they shouldn't, because you know, we're not talking about 16-year-olds here. We're talking about guys in the late teens that have already shown at a pro level that they're able to do it, at least at the MLS level, which is quite frankly good enough for Canada right now. But they have the potential to go even higher. So should they reach that even higher potential, or even if they become, you know, really, really good MLS players, that's great. And, you know, if a guy like Jonathan Osorio, if you can have 11 of those guys on the field at that level, I think Canada qualifies easily for the World Cup. But the one splash of cold water is the back line to me looks awful. It looks terrible. And like I mentioned it before, you know, Canada's trademark has always been good, solid defending, good goalkeeping, keeping the other team at bay, you know, squeezing out a tight result. And goalkeeping looks fine. You know, Milan Borjan is playing in the Champions League. There's Maxime Crépeau behind him. He looks like he's gonna develop into a pretty good goalkeeper, if not a great goalkeeper in his time. Yeah. And then they've got Alessandro Busti and a couple other guys that are kind of all fighting for that third spot. So I think goalkeeping will be fine, but that center back, especially that center back spot, I think there's a couple of fullbacks that may be able to step up, but that center back spot is looking very, very rough right now. And that's no disrespect to the players that are there, but how long can you rely on Dejan Jakovic to keep coming out when he's, you know, he's 33, 34 years old? Steven Vitoria, who's 32 or 31 or 32. We're talking about long term, right? You know, they got some guys in their prime, like a Daniil Henry, who I think is, and a Mandrikar James as well. But you need more. You need more. Where's the Jason DeVos of this group? The guy who's gonna, you know, get everyone by the scruff of their neck and kind of make sure everyone is in the right position, be that organizer in the back. Where's that guy? You know, where's Kevin McKenna? we do not see that with the current Canada setup, and I don't know if I see that with the younger players coming up either. So hopefully John Herdman has a good idea of where these players are coming up, and maybe there's some, you know, maybe Ricardo Ferreira is the next guy to declare for Canada, although he kind of made it a glass, so I don't know if you can even rely on him too much. But he's playing at a high level in Portugal. But regardless, they need two or three more center backs that are at least the Neil Henry level, if not higher, to show up at some point in the next 2-3 years, if we're talking about Qatar 2022, if Canada wants to be in the conversation. You know, I do think that the attacking talent already is on par with everyone except for Mexico already, you know, just in terms of potential, if not already there. But on the back line, I am very, very scared. But like I said before, at least it'll make games exciting because they'll at least be able to score a lot of goals when they are giving up a lot of goals. But maybe John Herdman has a plan for that as well.
Maybe there's a grandfather or grandparents out there that have Brazilians heritage, and they can find someone playing in the Brazilian leagues, just like in the late
Tony 90s. Meneses. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Although he was actually born here, he moved over there. But yeah, it was. I wouldn't say it was as tenuous as like a Mark Burcham kind of situation, because he was actually a citizen. But hey, yeah, if there's, you know, if anyone's listening that knows of any players that were born in you know, in Mississauga or Winnipeg or Victoria, whatever, that just so happen to be playing in the Brazilian leagues now, you know, give us a call or tweet us or whatever, or, you know, or at John Herdman or Canada Soccer, because we need those players right now.
If you are between the age of 14 and 17 and playing at a high level and Canadian, become a defender.
And a defender.
You'll be with the national team.
I wouldn't even say 14 and 17. Right now, I think 18. Anywhere between, because we're talking about right now, I'd say 17 to 28, really, basically.
So, yeah, because there's a good chance we'll see, I don't know, Alfonso Davies is left back, and we'll be like, why?
Yeah.
Robbo, get out of John Herdman's head.
We're all talking about these young guys, but, you know, Atiba Hutchinson is 35, still playing at a very, very high level at Besiktas. And he's played in the as a center back before, you know, why not, right? It takes the athletic demand off him because he's a 35-year-old man now. So it takes the stress off him of having to cover so much ground that, you know, you can give that up to Samuel Piet, whoever. But then he gets to play behind a Samuel Piet. And I think that maybe that's kind of the out-of-the-box thing that John Herdman has to do. Of course, convincing Atiba Hutchinson to go through another qualifying campaign at 35 years old is a whole other kettle of fish, but that's not my job. That's John Herdman's job. But I'm just throwing things against the wall right now.
Adrian Kahn came out of retirement, sort of.
Well, so did Dwayne D. Rosario. So I think we're past those guys, to be honest. You know, all respect to what they've done for the country. But I think we need to move on.
Yeah,
no Mississauga.
Yeah, exactly. The Mississauga Metro Stars will become a new helping hand.
They're going to become the Red Bulls in about 5 years, so don't worry.
Oh, they'll become the Mississauga Red Bulls. Rudy Schuler of the Sporting News, thank you very much for your time today.
No problem, guys. Anytime.
And we'll be right back after this very short break to wrap the show up for today.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at Soccer Today SPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
And we're back on Soccer Today. If you want to hear Dwayne and I's live reaction to the Baloo announcement yesterday, go to patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork and you'll get a chance to listen to a great interview we did as well yesterday with Aaron Hooper, who is a player from the region of Ottawa who traveled to Halifax to take part in the Halifax God Game Canadian Premier League tryouts. He is a veteran of the NPSL and the CSL, and had a lot to say about the Canadian Premier League, about How, what is the mentality after what could have been a career-ending injury? How do you come back from that? We spent half an hour with Aaron talking about the world of soccer with the Canadian perspective. So go to patreon.com/sportsbroadcasting network. And for $2 a month, Wayne, you get access to this beautiful show where you and I freak the F out too, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, well, yeah. And in the Aaron interview, Aaron's a mid-20s gentleman or young man, 24, I think. Finished his university, hasn't given up on his soccer dream, and sort of spoke, I think, really well to what it means to people that might have, he's right on the cusp of having perhaps potentially missed out on this, but he's not willing to give up on his dream just yet, and talked about how important, particularly a neat little anecdote from him running into Julian de Guzman a few years ago. So I encourage you to go listen to that. $2 a month, really good insight in terms of what it's like to be a player in Canada with this opportunity now in front. But as Kevin said, we also got to react live to the blue thing. Kevin was asking Aaron a question, and my phone, as Rudy's, was going crazy. And I'm like, what is going on my phone?
Mine too. I was like, what is happening? Why is it flashing like that?
And then I just hit it, and then I just sent Kevin, I screen captured and sent Kevin a message, this inside baseball with about 17 exclamation marks. And that was the rest of our show figured out right there. I don't know what we were going to talk about before. I can't remember now, but certainly our topic switched very quickly to what is exciting. And look, I mean, maybe, Kevin, this is the way for us to have a conversation about this now that we didn't really talk on last night. Should we be putting any water on this? Should we be throwing some cold water in our face with this? Because there is a chance that Ballou, he's in Barcelona right now, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's going to stay there. He could end up, you know, back in MLS in 4 years and struggling to find time. We don't know. We don't think that, but we don't know. So should we?
But there's Barcelona B made their due diligence too. Yes, they brought him to Barcelona B and not Barcelona 1, but he was the first one. He was signed before Davies. Of yes, of course, when he saw the amount that Davies got transferred, like, okay, yeah, maybe I should have stayed a year more to get a better understanding. But it was Ballou's decision with the Drogba's personal counsel that did help Ballou make that transition, to be quite fair. But Ballou thought that his development needed an injection of new ideas, of new technique, of new training technique. And we saw almost instantly, no offense, and no, this is not a backlash for Montreal and not for MLS at all, but once he moved to Barcelona B, his progression even surprised us, watching him from afar. Just seeing him this offseason in the International Champions Cup where Barcelona scoring a goal, setting up other goals, as a more, I would say, intriguing player, more depth to his game. But, you know, the moment that still sticks out in my mind is that game in Philadelphia for Ballou, where Ballou scored that beautiful goal from about 25 yards out. And this is what we're going to see. As soon as his confidence is at that level, even for Barcelona B, you will see him being influential on the pitch. And, you know, We've been pressing and slamming that brake for so long. It's time to be free. It's time to let it go. It's time to just be and observe it and agree with it and put the pressure, even if it's undue. Let's put the pressure on them. We've been protecting kids for so long. Let's just go all out with them. Let's play the kids.
Well, yeah, no, absolutely. John Herdman has long stated that his goal is to qualify for 2022, as it should be. No one is denying that. No one's denying that that should be the option. But I do think that you have to also build towards 2026, and that if it's a tie between a 28-year-old and a 20-year-old, the 20-year-old plays. I would rather see the 20-year-old, you know, make the errors, have the own goals, hopefully not too many of those, but you know what I mean? Like, I'd rather see those mistakes from a 20-year-old than a 28-year-old at this point, if all things are being equal. And we have, you know, the thing is, I don't think we need to worry about what Rudy said in terms of that defensive thing quite a bit, maybe for now. Like, I mean, Nations League and the Gold Cup next summer and all that, obviously. But I think when you're looking for 2022 in general, that some of this is going to work itself out with the Canadian Premier League. That there's, I think, where you'll find the first Canadian Premier League call-up will come on the defensive side of the ball, because it's by necessity, right?
The rest, the talent's too high now. Like, come on. I'll be very surprised if there's a trial list or a player with the Canadian Premier League that gets a starting job in the midfield or the attacking level right now. Look at the names right there. Even two mainstays of the Canadian men's national team that we believe are the future and the backbone of the midfield, like Osorio and Samuel Piette, they could lose out if someone else comes out, but still very important to development and the style. And, you know, you mentioned defensively. Defending is not just about defenders. And I am reassured when I'm looking at a Samuel Piette week in, week out here in Montreal and how important he could be to protect the defense, to give them one more helping hand, to be that sentinel right in front of the defense, to be the Canadian Pirlo. When are we going to say the real things? Samuel Piette is the Canadian Pirlo. I said it.
There you go. Well, you mentioned like this Effie Jackson-Lamel and Jordan Hamilton. Those are two young names that are talented that in the past would have been, we would have been talking about them to our faces blue here in Canada. We would have been like putting so much pressure on them to evolve and to continue to go forward in the ways that we'd hope they won. And in this case, you look at both those players and I don't know how many national team caps they have combined between them in the next few years. I'm sure they'll get a look at Nations League occasionally, the two of them.
They'll play the Nations League. They'll play when Barca and Bayern decides that the other ones are not released.
Yeah, I mean, these are depth players now, and that's not a bad thing. It's just like this is the type of thing we're talking about up front. But when you're talking about the back, it's a whole other thing going on there. I do think in terms of the Canadian Premier League, that there might be something that, and I say this with MLS all the time too, it's flash forward 2 years. We've had 2 years of Canadian Premier League play, and we're in the heart of World Cup qualifying at this point for 2022. You know, hopefully we're getting late in the stage of the semifinals, pushing towards a hex. By this time, you can look at the Canadian Premier League, and you might have like a pairing of Canadians that you might be able to bring in together, you know, to sort of make up for maybe a talent deficit, and familiarity might help. So I think that this is where the league can really step in. We see it all the time with the Central American countries that they will throw rosters together that are 50% or 70% even domestic based, and you look at the names on the sheet and you go, eh, they're not that great, but then they perform well as a team, and I think that this is something that Canada's never had before, and now maybe Iceland? That increased familiarity might allow that to happen more often.
Why can't we be Iceland? There's no reason, and that's where we're going. And I do have a feeling that the Canadian Premier League might have something to do with this for just a pairing here and there, two guys that have chemistry, maybe two defenders and a midfielder that actually gets something going and catches the eye of John Herdman in the future, if that's possible. And another aspect that we didn't talk about for the Ballou decision, because, yeah, it's the decision. It's our version of the decision. Terrible show in 2010 by LeBron James. But Ballou's decision, you know, I think is motivated, too, by the youth aspect of the staff, by who the staff is, from John Herdman to Mauro Biello to Yannick Girard, préparateur physique, to other that are in this for the long run, right? We just went through three coaches in about 4 years for the national team, from Floro to Zambrano to Herdman. And it seems to be now all about Herdman, and he's got the keys to the mansion until he burns it down, if it ever happens. I do have a feeling this has something to do with it, too. Because, first of all we heard about Herdman's first camp in November and how it all happened was positive. What we heard about the amount of details involved, he's a detail-oriented coach, and we've all heard positive things. So all those marginal gains all combined made the decision a non-decision, if you truly think about it, for Ballou Tabla. And I guess that's where he was at the moment. He decided to. And I remember talking to the Barcelona press representative a few months ago, trying to get Ballou Tabla on the show. And he's like, well, right now, Ballou's not doing interview. We'll see about the future. So I'm still trying and still holding hope. But he mentioned, too, the national team aspect. It's not in his plans right now. And if you look deeply at where Barcelona B is right now, they're in the Liga Segunda. Like the third division, which is branded
BBX. They're in the third tier, yeah.
Yeah, but it's a third tier. It's a second division of the second tier. So third division. And is he that important? Is it that important for him to play there? Or maybe to get some chance to go play with his national team, to get that exposure, to get those moments that are pressure-filled, as much as you're playing Real Madrid B or playing Valencia B, and pressure is not necessarily the same thing. You get the pressure when you play for the big club and when you train with the big club. He does train with the big club sometimes at the time. But there's still a generation that is not gone yet from Barcelona. So until he, until Messi, Busquets, and that generation makes room for the upcoming one, Balú's going to have difficult times finding Barcelona playing time. So if you're Balú, and that's an opportunity without leaving your club to get higher exposure nationally, internationally, when it comes to CONCACAF and it comes to being that important piece, and to have that growing moment where you might be successful, where you might win a few Nations League Champions, Nations League games, and then qualify for Group A, and then face Mexico at Azteca, face the United States wherever they're playing, and face Honduras in San Pedro Sula, and not lose 8-1. Yes, that's what it's all about, and I do have a feeling all those little small aspect of this entire decisions are for the best of Balú's career, and if I can put my hand in the fire, I would bet that Barcelona steered him towards Canada because they read the tea leaves too.
Yeah, that, well, that's why I mentioned the under 20 qualifying, and we haven't talked a lot about the under 20 because it's out of sight, out of mind, right? But it's November 1st is when it starts. We're 6 weeks away. I could potentially see Barcelona thinking, looking at that and having conversations with John Herdman and saying, look, this for his development, what's better for him? To go have some competitive games against his peers, the potential to shine, potential to help his national team at a youth level, mind you, go to some place that they haven't gone before. I think that's a beneficial thing to him. You consider the fact that probably Vancouver's out of the playoffs at that point too, so you might have Davies there too. And I'm really excited about this under 20 team. It's been a long time since they've qualified. It was the 2005. Ian Hume, I think, was on that team. That's how long ago it was, right? So it's been a long time. You look at, the Nations League qualifier. I think another thing, too, when you're talking about the decision to make this commitment now, they're talking about pressure and not trying to have distractions and things like that. He goes to this Nations League qualifier, steps out on the pitch. He's cap-tied. No one's asking the question anymore. At that point, he can then say, all right, now I want to focus on Barcelona until the Gold Cup next summer. Yeah. And he's cap-tied. No one's worried about it. No one's asking him. No one's thinking about it. It's just he needs to take focus on his club career until the Gold Cup next year, and then that's going to take that distraction away as well.
Poor Balú. Ever since he became a professional, what question do you think he answered the most? Oh, how's MLS? No. How's MLS? No. How's your transition to Europe? No. Is Balú, will you come to Canada, please? That was the question he's been asked probably the most in his life, more than how you doing, I think.
Yeah, well, and look, if you saw him in that video, he looked happy. I don't know what that means. He was, like, smiling and laughing.
And he's a shy guy. And he, honest to goodness, he's really a shy personality. And, yes, he's blooming and becoming a more important piece of his life. He's growing into a man from being a teenager. But he was a very shy teenager. He was not that type of teenager. He wasn't a loud, brash teenager that would command the dressing room and to look, hey, look at me. No, he was a very subdued player, very shy. And the first time he talked to a microphone, he was not necessarily intimidated, but he's just like, being in the spotlight is not why he does this. He just likes to play football, and he's good at it. It's not about the spotlight. You know, that encourages me even more. Like, I don't want just to be a star. I want to be a great football player. It's about the game. It's about the opportunities. It's not about the glory. And that's when the glory comes, when it's not about the glory.
Fair enough. Yeah, absolutely. Now we have to watch Barca B streams. I don't know how I'm going to find those. They're probably on Barca TV.
It's not that bad. It's not that bad. Usually you actually can watch them sometimes on YouTube and Facebook, where just like Barca B, and they stream their games on Facebook. So it's actually pretty seamless.
Yeah, actually, anyone who's ever been to Barcelona, it's so impressive, the entire facilities around that. It's a proper, it's a club, like a sports club, right? And so you walk around Barcelona and you see, like near Nou Camp, you see like baseball diamonds and basketball, like lacrosse field. It's like crazy. Yeah. And then, yeah, so it doesn't surprise me they do that. It's a fascinating thing at any rate. Okay, we've been on an hour now, so perhaps it's time to stop, but it's exciting. I can't remember the last time we had a national team conversation where we're all laughing and smiling. Like, come on.
Well, I don't think I've ever had one like that. So that's how long it has been, at least 5 years, because there's always reality that comes back to haunt us. Yeah, but we're going to lose to Honduras. Yeah, but. Let's go all in. Yeah, let's go all out.
You always go back and listen to the podcast that I did after the 8-1 loss. I do believe it was just me whittling wood for an hour. with a knife, I think. There was something like that. It was kind of ominous, but I don't actually remember. And I remember what I wrote. I had two articles written that day, one if they'd won and one if they lost. And yeah, I put the one that they lost up at like 5-1 in the middle of the game. So yeah.
Delete the first one. Yeah, exactly.
I refound it and I posted it a couple years later what I would have written. But anyway.
What ifs? There's no what ifs anymore. Baloo chose Canada. And Robbo's out, so it's a positive day all across Canadian soccer.
Well, unless you're Robbo.
Do you really think he's mad? Come on. No, we all know where he's going. He's going to Scotland, and he's getting a job there.
All right, there you go. Okay, on that note, I'm shutting up, Kevin. You say bye, as always.
As always, you can follow Dwayne on social media at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Laramie, and the show at Soccer Today SBN. You can support us financially at patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork. $2 a month will give you access to the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast for patrons only, where Dwayne and I freaked the F out yesterday learning about Baloo and our great interview with Aaron Hooper about the Canadian Premier League God Games Trials. Tomorrow, I'll be at the God Games Trials in Laval, and we'll have more info on the proceedings of those tryouts. And until next time, as always, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.